It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Okay, so, and then you also have to do your 8-bit, 16-bit. What is your sound effect?
Okay.
Okay.
Is that going to be our hellos?
Yes.
Okay.
So, okay, here we go. Hello, friends. My name is Smashin' Smench, joined by Goombub and Razalina.
Wow. I don't know. This is, you sprung this on me. I had no time to prepare.
That's when she gets hit by a red shell.
Yeah, exactly.
After she spent way too much time hanging out with Wario and Waluigi.
Yeah, she wants to fit in with the Waz.
I panicked.
Making stuff is hard.
Especially in the entertainment world.
Where big egos, bigger budgets,
and just plain bad luck
can make things go horribly wrong.
And we're going behind the scenes of these disastrous,
never-ending,
and often dangerous productions
to find out why
it was a shit show.
That's the other thing, too, is like this movie had, I mean, Dennis Hopper, who's great, John Leguizamo, who I love, and Bob Hoskins, like, is also really good.
Was also there.
Yeah. Bob Hoskins.
Was also, he was also present and accounted for.
Bob Hoskins is actually a perfect choice.
He absolutely was.
Absolutely perfect choice. Clint, this is why Hoskins talking about playing Mario.
Right.
And he has Cockney accent.
Cockney. My 7-year-old son is quite depressed about my playing Mario. He knows I can't even program a VCR, let alone play a game. How do I prepare for a role? I'm the right shape. I've got a mustache.
That was the criteria.
There's a really great, like, behind the scenes footage of him going, you know, I used to do Shakespeare, and now I'm just playing a little guy that goes like this, like, jumps around.
Again. They must have sold him. They're like, this is, look, it's Macbeth. It's Macbeth in the Mushroom Kingdom. We promise you, it's Oscar worthy material.
Righto.
It's like, Mr. Hoskins, you already played, you know, a private eye with a bunch of cartoons. Like, this is just, you know, a lateral move.
Yeah.
Now you're a plumber from Brooklyn with your with a brother that's 20 years your junior.
Yeah. And instead of working with the director of Back to the Future and the producer Steven Spielberg, you're going to be working with the guys that did Max Headroom.
Yeah. What the fuck is Max Headroom?
Yeah, exactly. Clint, will you be our Leguizamo?
Oh, every day I will. I love John Leguizamo.
He's been waiting for you to ask.
I know, right? The shoot seemed to take forever, but at least there was Samantha and Bob. And Bob Scotch. Oh man, that movie sucks. And I suck in it.
He's not very good in that movie.
I still love him though.
I use the clip right after that in the video where it's like, who are you supposed to be? I'm Luigi Mario. You what? You got a problem with that? And it's like, what kind of comeback is that?
Yeah. No, I was just asking your name.
Who are you?
Who are you? I'm just asking your name.
Yeah.
Luigi Mario. Pleasure to meet you.
It's like he's like defensive from the onset because he knows how fucking embarrassing every line in this movie is. Have we talked about the fact that his name is Mario Mario?
Out of all the legacy on this, Shigeru Miyamoto has adopted the name Mario Mario from the movie. So that is officially his name, Mario Mario.
But why was it ever his name? That feels so fucking lazy. It's just like, he can't just be Mario. Who does he think he is? Cher? He's got to have a last name. What is it? Mario?
Like, yeah, in the scene, he goes, he's like, name, Mario. Last name, Mario. And so, yeah, is he saying his name is Mario Mario? Well, no, okay, he's not saying Cher. He's not saying I'm not Beyonce, right?
Right.
Because later Luigi says, I'm Luigi Mario. So, okay, yeah, it is Mario Mario, yeah.
Or maybe the joke of that scene was that he's like, it's just Mario. I don't have a last name. But then they were like, yeah. Oh. And then when Luigi had to say his name, maybe he just was just like, well, he said his last name was Mario, so I'm going to say Luigi Mario.
It seems like they were trying to work backwards from, like, it's the Mario brothers.
I love how we're like, how we're like breaking this down as though this is like some brilliant piece of film.
It requires it.
Well, yeah, the Super Mario Brothers. But you could just say like, oh, look, my name's Mario, and I started my own plumbing business, and then my brother wanted to join. And so it's... I didn't want to go through all the paperwork of changing my name.
Yes.
And so it's just Mario just Brothers.
It's a tax reason.
First name, Mario. Last name, none of your goddamn business.
Fuck off.
That's a little too long for the tax form, so we're going to need a shorter name.
A few episodes ago, we discussed removed actors from films. And one of those was Ana de Armas not being in the film Yesterday.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Even though she was in the trailer. As I mentioned at the time, two jabronis who rented the film on Amazon Prime were suing Universal for false advertising. Well, that lawsuit went far beyond what anyone thought possible. During the California trial, Universal argued that movie trailers have a long history of including footage not in a final film.
Right.
And sometimes they also shoot things just for trailers, giving the example in court of that Jurassic Park teaser we just watched.
Mm, yeah. Mm-hmm. I've seen that movie, though. It's called Billy and the Clonosaurus.
Tammy and the T-Rex. They also argued that siding with the plaintiffs would open the door for any lawsuit when a film doesn't measure up to audiences' expectations.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Which I completely agree with.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The judge ruled in favor of the fools, who both tragically lost $3.99 each.
That's crazy, though. That's a crazy judgment.
Right? I agree. The case will now proceed to discovery and a motion for class certification. I don't know what that means. I'm not
like a class action lawsuit. Like more people could basically get in on claiming money if they too felt robbed by the lack of Ana de Armas.
Oh yeah.
Which look, we all do. I'm not saying.
Let's get in on this.
She's not great.
I feel like with every movie, if Ana de Armas isn't in this movie, I feel like it's lacking.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what the movie is. Even if she's not like cast in it and there was never even announced that she was going to be in a movie. I'm like, where's Ana de Armas?
You're like, where is she? Oh, she's in here. Oh, I didn't know Ana de Armas was going to be in here. This is much better.
Old people watching like The Price is Right in the morning are now going to get commercials instead of like,
were you duped by the Yesterday trailer?
Yeah. Are you or someone you know or loved been affected by the Ana de Armas lack in the
track? Lack of Ana de Armas in your life?
Was the lawyer for those two guys Saul Goodman? Just need to ask that question.
Probably.
Feels like some bullshit he'd get into.
This movie may or may not feature Ana de Armas.
There's like a pharmaceutical ad like,
at the end.
They're like, this video may or may not contain Ana de Armas. It's just like there's like fine fucking print at the end.
We can neither confirm nor deny the existence of Ana de Armas.
If you feel emotional distress from the lack of Ana de Armas, please contact your doctor immediately. Also, if you want to hire me to do those, I'm available.
That was quick. I was thinking to myself, I was like, should I attempt that? No, it's going to be too hard. And then
I got you.
That was really good. We begin filming. This is what Joe Johnston says. This is kind of a really an important thing that kind of wraps up the experience on this film.
There was no original script. It's the one thing that almost made this a life-threatening ordeal for a lot of people.
Wow.
Because they were just like cobbling pages together from like the, like just random scripts. It's like, hurry, put them together.
Yeah.
There you go. That's what we're shooting
today. Run through the jungle. Don't hurt yourself.
We're just going to shoot a whole day of running through the jungle while we wait for the next day's pages to be done being written. So we'll use it somewhere. Yeah, it's fine.
It'll work. Johnston says he tried to convince his cast that not having a finalized script would be like a fun collaborative exercise to make up the film as they went along. Like they all got to like contribute. And
here's Sam Neill.
Oh my
like,
God.
A classically trained like actor. And he's like,
the fuck?
The hell? Yeah.
Yeah.
He's not an improviser.
He's like, give me an occupation. A doctor. Well, I'm already a doctor.
paleontologist. Raptor expert.
Give me a location. An island.
Isla Sorna. That's very specific. No, every single person on that set was so mad. They're just like, collaborative exercise my ass.
Yeah.
What the hell are we doing?
With a production camp, like, what? Maybe 200, 300 people on set? Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Insane. How many of those people were just kind of like just sitting around, just like
going. Okay.
I wish dinosaurs were
again.
Real.
The poor script supervisor. I just always
is
think
the, I don't even think there would have been a one.
They just
one.
Like, yeah, they just probably like walked right off that set. See you later.
So, this is what Joe Johnston has to say about shooting with no script.
We had a script for the day we were shooting and maybe the next day and sometimes a week ahead of time, but we never had a story that had a beginning, middle, and end while we were making the film. That is apparent. That's very apparent.
That tracks.
It's not the way to make a movie, he continues. Sometimes we were writing the things that we were going to be shooting that afternoon. It's stupid. The only good thing about it is that it gives you the freedom to decide what you're going to do as you go along.
This is the philosophy of myself as a child making a movie on like our old VHS recorder.
Yeah.
There's no script.
Just making it up
all
as you
I
go.
All I knew is it was going to be a Batman movie and I wanted to play the villain. And so I created a character called the Bomb Master. This is all real. This is actually the real thing. And like we had costumes, you know, like just like they had sets and we just kind of threw some shit together.
Yeah, but what was your budget? Was it $48 million? Yeah.
Our budget was whatever we spent on the ice cream truck that came by. It was a budget of my mom's afternoon. Yeah. Watching
Screw it, we'll do it live! This is what Johnston said about dinosaurs.
He said, directing dinosaurs is fun the first couple of times, but you need a bullhorn and a 2x4 to really do it effectively.
What's the 2x4 for?
Puppeteer, get it right!
I thought people like, if like the so Spinosaurus aggressive. Is like jaw was open, he's like, oh shit, yeah, take a 2x4, like push it back up.
Yank it up there. I mean, if you have to ask what the 2x4 is for, then you're not.
You're not.
You have no idea.
Yeah, get off set, Billy.
You don't know what the director's 2x4 is for.
It's a very important piece of film equipment.
Yeah, he's like, get out of here, Billy. Oh, my name's William. Sir. Not yet. It isn't. Not until you've grown
not
the
earned
fuck
it.
Up.
Yeah. So during the Spinosaurus attack on the plane, there's only one shot. So during that whole sequence, there is only one shot with stuntmen. The rest are the real actors getting beat up in that plane.
Oh, really?
Like that whole rolling sequence, is it, and crushing and stuff like that. This is what Joe Johnston said about the actors experiencing this.
I don't know how the actors got out without broken limbs and amputations. It was at all times safe, I'm told. But it's amazing to see what they go through.
Wow.
I'm told.
Look, I was told it was completely safe.
Is it safe? Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Right. Well, he didn't know because he was too busy with smacking the robot with the 2x4.
I know. He walks up like with the 2x4. Like,
are we ready?
Yeah. Hey, is this safe? The stunt coordinator is like, yeah. That seems to be.
Thumbs up.
All the while he gets splinters in his thumb. Ow.
Oh, yeah, he's just sitting there digging at his thumb, getting the splinter out. Yeah, roll again. Yeah.
You okay, Sam? All right, okay, cool.
Taya Leone likes to joke that there was more makeup to conceal their real wounds versus their fake ones.
Wow. Jeez. All the bruises and shit.
All the bruises and shit, yeah. Maybe they should have just left their bruises for the shooting, but then, like, consistency sake, it would be kind of, like, nonsense.
Right.
Last of the 2x4 is for consistency. You got a
bruise. Look, your wound's all healed. Bam!
How's that bruise? Ah, it's clearing
it's
up pretty nice.
It's looking better.
Needs to be more red and blue. Smack.
Give me the 2x4. The director's 2x4.
The makeup department just goes to Home Depot. Yeah.
So our next one is Arnold Schwarzenegger in his first film, Hercules in New York.
Oh, that sounds amazing. How have I not seen this before?
it's crazy.
Is it Encino Man, but like...
like made by like just like low budget shit. Like it's pretty terrible. It's really, how did this get made? Did it? And he's dubbed over because of how thick his Austrian accent was. Really thick then.
Yeah.
Like it was his first movie. You can barely understand.
Yeah.
And the guy they get to do him is so vastly different. He sounds kind of like a radio DJ.
Ah, get to the chopper.
It's a big boy and farts in the morning. It's like that kind of...
Like, it's chop, like shock chop.
Straight face. I can't say it with a straight face.
I'll be back. Chip, chip, cheerio.
Brow, brow. He's like doing his own. He's doing his own fucking sound effects in the booth. Wah, wah, wah.
This movie is really avant-garde.
Yeah, it's experimental. It's almost like we're playing with lions.
That makes sense, though. They would dub his voice because, I mean, Hercules is Greek, and then he's in New York. So, like, what accent? Can't have an Austrian accent.
Wasn't Greek.
Hercules is Roman. Heracles is Greek.
We get it. Your family's Greek.
Get the fuck out of here. I'm sorry. You can cut that. That sounded like a real dick.
Oh, I'm clean. My family's Greek. I know about different people from history.
Actually, the funny thing is I didn't really come across that realization until like maybe 3 months ago. I was like, holy shit. Heracles, huh?
No kidding.
Oh, God.
It's the same person.
Yeah,
same person.
So Fox Animation like had kept this a secret the whole time. This is Mike Scully about the secrecy.
We've taken script security to the point of lunacy, though it helped that we wrote it in Aramaic.
That's awesome.
So to throw off people, their production trailer had a sign on it. And this ties into my latest video about Arrested Development, which was canceled in favor for the Pamela Anderson bookstore comedy Stacked.
What?
Oh my God. What are you even talking about?
Yes. It was a terrible comedy that lasted only 2 years. Had Christopher Lloyd in it.
I'm sorry, 2 years?
Yeah, exactly.
I thought you were going to say 2 episodes.
Did he play Pamela Anderson?
wait.
Man, he's got rage.
Wait a minute. So, Arrested Development, a beloved show. I know you and I love the show. Ray loves the show.
I love the show.
Ryan loves the show. We all love Arrested Development. It's just another one of those very quotable shows, right?
Mm-hmm.
So many nuances. Very clever. You can watch it again and again and find little jokes. Mm-hmm. They canceled Arrested Development for a Pamela Anderson-led show called Stacked, where she is a bookstore owner?
She works at a bookstore.
Oh, well, she doesn't even own it.
She doesn't even own it.
She's a book. She works at a bookstore. Pamela, it's an,
get it? It's a double entendre.
Yeah, I get yeah. It. But Clint, let me point this out to you. Tits. Does that change your mind?
I mean, I do like them.
I am a fan.
I am a fan.
In the first 10 seasons.
After a while, I just feel like I've just been seeing the same tits over and over again.
Over again.
And that lasted 2 years? That was an actual show?
Yes.
Like two, I can't, like, I can't
You've
even...
never heard of the show, Ray?
No.
Ryan, have you heard
never
of the show?
Never in my life.
No, but before... I hear it's on Disney Plus.
Oh, God, we got to go. Sorry, podcast over. We got to go watch Stack right now.
Have you ever heard of the show before doing the research for this episode?
Yes, I remember. I remember the ads for it.
He's like, oh, I remember.
No, I remember those tits.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that was the original working title. It was called Tits.
Yeah. Big old titties.
Like, listen, you guys, we can't books. We can't call it tits, okay? We just can't.
We can't call it the D section.
Give us another word, the Dewey Decimal, double D. Whole other meaning.
But yes, when the phone call came in to Mitch Hurwitz, he was told, sorry, we want your time slot to go to Stacked.
Was he just like, how about no?
Yeah. So tying back to The Simpsons, mm-hmm. they put a sign on their production trailer that said Stacked Productions.
Like, and they thought that would leave them. Oh, I was just gonna say they thought people would leave them more alone.
What? I heard there were boobs in here.
There are tits in this trailer.
Oh my God! The tagline is so stupid. Pamela Anderson stars in a comedy series that proves you can't judge a book by its cover girl.
By its tits.
Oh, come on! That's kind of clever.
All right, fine.
Of course, her character's name is Skylar.
We know you'll Baywatch this.
<Ba-da-dum-ts>.
I can't believe this is a real show. Well, now I just want to go home and watch the rest
of
the development.
Yeah, we're going to go.
Unlike most animated films and the TV show where script is locked, they storyboard, animate, and fix where needed, The Simpsons movie was like a never-ending long-form improv
with
A-B testing.
Ryan just shuddered. Like, I just felt that whole body. I just saw a whole body chill move through you.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, listening to your guys' episode about that Jurassic Park movie, like, you can kind of do that with live action.
Exactly. Exactly. You were dead on. Every scene in the movie, every scene, plot line, joke, emotional hook, was constantly rewritten, improved, or removed.
Interesting.
How far into the process?
A lot. What you're saying is, like, it's very easy to do, like, a comedy film to just improv some bullshit. Like, we've talked
about...
Throw
some, like, new lines in. Yeah.
Anchorman and Spinal Tap, like, they have deleted scenes that equal a movie.
Right.
But that's because you can just continually shoot, right?
Yeah.
But an animated film says a lot of fucking work.
This is why animated films don't typically have deleted scenes.
Exactly.
It doesn't exist. There's no cutting room floor for an animated
movie. Yeah, at the most it's going to be like a rough animatic or like a storyboard with
some like behind the scenes technical, like, here's how we drew these characters and blah, 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 blah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So instead we have on this movie an animator going, I missed my daughter's wedding. You cut it?
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much.
That countdown clock was really intimidating.
I got all these,
it was on everybody's
desk. I got all
desk.
These whip marks for nothing.
Her stepdad walked her down the aisle, which that marriage ended because of this movie.
Because the film used computers over traditional cell style. So this movie is actually done almost entirely in computer. It allowed them to make the movie much faster. But as Al Jean jokes, you could pitch a joke, draw it, and then cut it in a week.
Wow.
Jeez.
Whoa.
Harsher, right? They never revealed the plot of the film up until the week of release.
Like to the writers?
They're just like, all right, you write this joke. You write this joke. You write this joke. I swear it will work. I promise you. Just trust us.
You're not far off.
Oh, my God.
Like, he talks about a dome. What's the dome?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm drawing a what now over Springfield? Homer has a pet. Who's it? What? Yeah.
So they never revealed the plot because this allowed them to change anything at will so they wouldn't be stuck with anything.
They didn't want to nail anything down.
Yeah. This is Dan Castellaneta, a.k.a. Homer and a whole bunch of other people, Barney, Grandpa, talking about this process.
I felt like a fireman. We should have just lived above the recording studio and put the pole in. I didn't know what stayed in, what went out. I couldn't even follow what the story was. I just knew it was funny.
He had to say that last part, didn't he?
Yeah. He's like, I didn't know what the story was. And then he like looks over and they're all standing there with their
2x4s. Their whips. Yeah, their 2x4s.
I mean, it was funny.
It was funny. It was good.
Okay, so The Good Dinosaur was released on November 25th, 2015. The idea was formed in 2009 by Bob Peterson and Peter Sohn. And Peter Sohn, again, was the director.
Wait, is that one guy? And he was like, Bob Peterson and Peter Sohn. He was just trying to make it sound like it was two guys?
Bob Peterson and Peter Sohn.
Oh, my God.
He's like, I don't want people to think this is kind of a bad movie, so I gotta share the blame with a made-up co-writer.
It's a pseudonym.
He's like looking. He's doing that movie trope thing where he's looking around to find a name, and he just sees his own last name, and he's like, Peter Sohn.
Yeah.
Da-da-da, done.
Never put that together.
If he was like, look around in this room, he's like, Mike Computer.
My computer? Yes, it was written by me, Bob Peterson, Peter Sohn, and my computer.
Yeah.
That's why I'm here, the movie conspiracies. Okay, right. I'm here to spread all the movie conspiracies.
And this was going to be Peterson's first solo directing gig. He was an animator on Toy Story. And
Peterson or Peter Sohn?
Yeah, which one are we talking about?
This is going to be a problem, huh? I didn't even realize
just
this.
Enunciate.
Bob.
Okay. Peterson.
Peter Sohn. The co-director.
Peter Sohn person. He's not Bob Peterson at all.
You know what it is? It's just Bob Peterson with like a half-drawn mustache on one side. So when he turns his face one way, he's like, I'm Bob Peterson. He turns the other way without the mustache. I'm Peter Sohn.
And for some reason, he has a Spanish accent.
That's so weird. I'd never thought of that. Okay, so speaking of Jon Favreau, he says working with him on Swingers was not easy. But looking back, it's easier to appreciate his methods. Clint, this is Jon Favreau.
His persona is something he cultivates. There's part of him that is him, part of him he creates. He enjoys the image he projects of being a mad scientist of cinema. It gives him leeway.
So
that's even more annoying to me.
Okay, we're gonna keep diving into these.
We all have like parts of ourselves that we like. You know, like when I'm around you two, I'm a different version of myself than I am, say, around like my parents.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
That's just because
your work life or your family life or your friend's life.
Yeah.
But when you're like buying into this view that of just like, oh, I'm like a brilliant like genius and like, oh, I can't be bothered to like be organized or like know things or like know when meetings are happening because I'm too smart.
Okay. We're only on the first quote. We got a lot more to go.
Look,
okay,
I have a lot to say.
This is Jon Favreau again.
I think there's a method to his madness. I don't know how it works, to be honest with you. I do know that the guy is able to pull it off every time.
Okay, so this is John August about Lyman's methods.
He has that scrappy, let's try it this way quality. That's great when you're making Swingers or Go, but it's hard to scale it up to a big studio film.
So when he did Bourne Identity, which was a $60 million movie, he wanted to continue being like improvise, like he wanted to be able to just pick up the camera and shoot everything guerrilla style. Mm-hmm. But you mm-hmm. can't do that when you have a crew of hundreds, and you need permits to be somewhere with that many people.
Yeah,
right.
So
especially when Matt Damon's jumping from building to building.
Yeah, exactly. So and he had producer Frank Marshall to control him, and Frank Marshall has done so many things, lots of Steven Spielberg. And he's only directed like a couple of times, one of them being Congo. He had to pull Lyman kicking and screaming over the finish line to complete the Bourne Identity.
Oh my God.
No, I don't want to finish.
I don't want to. I'm bored now. I'm projecting a lot onto Doug Lyman because
we're going to keep going here.
Someone else can finish it for me. Yeah.
I just need the listeners to know that I've just known so many people like this.
I gave you a quote that you're going to love here coming up. But okay, this is Frank Marshall about working with Lyman on Bourne Identity was such a pain.
I stepped into territory I've never been in before in 30 years. I've always had a respect for the line between a producer and a director, and I had to step over that line into something that I feel is the director's responsibility. I'm not saying I directed the movie, but as the producer, it was my job to get the movie finished.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? And that's very hard when you're dealing with Doug Lyman, who constantly changes his mind.
Who's apparently also a giant man baby.
Yeah, and he's brilliant. Or indecisive. We don't remember. At the end of the day, Lyman does admit that the final film was a collaborative effort with Frank Marshall. But this is what he had to say about that, Ray.
At the end of the day, look at Congo and look at my movies and let an audience figure out where that movie came from. Boo.
Wow.
He does not give a shit. And so, and one more quote, Jenny Ray. This is this one I had to pull just for you. This is the line producer, Patrick Crowley, who worked on Bourne Identity.
He's created this personality where he doesn't have to do the planning or make decisions or be responsible.
Yeah. Crack, 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 crack. I felt that, like, Ray's whole body was just like shaking with like anger, and like I felt that in this room.
Anything spoken on the radio had to be very direct and very accurately said. So there was no room for interpretation. So there was one moment where they were setting up a between shots, and Pitt and Jolie were just off the side and they were playing ping pong.
Uh-huh.
And someone went on the radio, was like, "Where are Pitt and Jolie?" And the assistant just goes, "Oh, they're screwing around over here." And the lineman was like, no, you can't say things like that.
Yeah, I'm just fucking around.
They're playing with balls. I mean, they're ping ponging. I mean, they've got their paddles out.
She's playing with his balls. I mean,
yeah, they're knocking balls around.
they're
fucking.
Right. Every possible word is sexual. Yeah.
So all that kind of stuff, no matter what it was, went into the tabloids.
Mm.
So this is some of
Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie play ping pong naked.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Just add that little spicy detail. Strip ping pong. It was just a regular game of ping pong.
Okay. So back to the tabloids. So this is some of the bullshit that just like came out as, oh, this is what was happening on set.
Yeah.
Jolie deliberately did a move during their tango where she came face to face with Pitt's crotch. That's scripted. That was in the fucking movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was deliberate because it's in the script.
But, like, I'm sure, like, via blankety-blank rumor mill, by the time it got to the fifth person, she did what?
What?
Oh, yeah. Type it up. During their fight sex scene, Jolie didn't wear any panties to surprise Pitt.
Ooh.
That the sex scene was so hot, it had to be trimmed down so it wasn't rated R.
Whoa. R. No, I know. That's what I'm saying. Like, unless it was going to be rated X, I'm not interested.
Yeah.
Yeah, seriously.
So, speaking of the filming the sex scene. So this is where this the kind of I go into
the awkwardness of Lyman.
And oh, God.
Is
I'm scared.
The thing he was the most worried about on Bourne Identity was the scene where they make out. Not the fight scenes, not taking on $60 million. The scene where they kiss was the one thing he dreaded the most.
Oh my God, they're
human contact.
Lips are gonna touch.
So
that's surprising to hear because there's a lot of great sexual chemistry in this movie.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Like,
but so his biggest worry was their sex scene.
Ah, of course.
So going into it, so he thought he'd this is him.
No.
He was like, I'm going to try to break the ice on the awkwardness of filming this sex scene. And so this is Doug Liman.
Oh, no. I hate it. Okay, what did he say? I had an ex-girlfriend who'd given me the nickname Bunny. And I said, I'm sure, Angie, that you've had cute names like that for your boyfriends. And Brad, I'm sure you've had girlfriends who called you, you know, Little Mushroom or Walnut or My Little Scrubby Wubby. I honestly thought everybody does this. And they were like, no. So I was left there, naked. It wasn't a bonding experience at all. I lost all sexual credibility with Angie on the spot. She called me Bunny from then on. She never let me forget.
Oh my God, that is amazing.
Yeah.
Wait, did he come in there and talk to them and tell them this while he was naked?
Yeah, was he actually naked? He's like, look, guys.
Yeah, I'm breaking the ice, guys.
Just gonna break the ice a little bit here. You know, we're just gonna let it all hang out. If we all see each other naked, if the crew's all naked too while we see, it's not gonna be weird for anybody because cool. We're all naked.
Let me introduce you to Bunny.
Little Bunny.
Okay, so I'm gonna jump to probably my favorite bit in the whole movie, which is the mall.
yes.
So the mall scene was an abandoned mall, which was really rare at the time. Because if you think about it, like even when we were growing up, malls were
a big
king.
Deal.
Yeah. Nowadays, they're half of them are empty and dying out, right? With Amazon and stuff. And so back then, that was weird. But they had this just abandoned mall that was completely structurally sound. And it wasn't like decrepit in any way because it wasn't abandoned that long. Inside the mall, they hired all those brands to fill the stores with actual products.
Wow.
So that's why it looks like just a real mall.
See, feels like they were trying to find ways to spend that fucking $17 million or whatever the hell it was. They're just like, give us $17 million. Oh, God, I didn't think they'd actually do it.
It's like, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's, with that $17 million, like, you see it all on the screen.
It is all, there.
100%.
It is all there.
100%.
Like the Toys R Us? Like,
yeah, so if you take all those brands, and a bunch of them probably don't exist. Yeah, the only one I recognize was Toys R Us, and they're pointing out a bunch of them. Mm-hmm. And so what they get, it's just like free advertising, right? They get there and they get to stock the store. So they tell Toys R Us, we want to put Toys R Us in here. You just stock it like it's just a real mall. And so they just did that. They just stocked everything as a real mall. And all the companies that signed on to do it, there were some that were like, okay, yes, we'll do this, but you can't destroy anything. And then others were like, yeah, shit, yeah.
Why would you care? Like, people still get to see your stuff. It has nothing to do with, like, how good or shitty your products are.
Right.
They're going to be there.
Yeah, it's just like, a car going through something is still a car going through something.
Right. Sharper Image is like, we don't want people to see that our stuff can be run over. Like, yeah, no, your shit can be run over.
Yeah. So
your stuff isn't car-proof, people.
Yeah.
It's like that Rick and Morty bit where they're doing there's another episode of man versus car. And then at the end he's just like, wouldn't the car always win?
Yeah,
car is gonna crush your shit.
Yeah, and the ones that did allow it, they were like, okay, we'll just stock it for free. You just only have to pay for it if you destroy it. So whatever the cars go through and destroy, then they just have to pay for that. Mm, so they actually got a good deal on lot of this. But because it's stocked like an entire mall, they have to guard it. because people were going to steal it.
People were going to go steal the shit. Yes. Yeah.
So now they got to hire security.
So they had to hire security guards to monitor it 24/7.
At this point, they're basically opening a mall. They just opened a mall. Yeah. Like they just fucking opened a whole ass mall.
I hope the story ends with that mall reopening because it's so popular.
It's the Blues Brothers.
Just every once in a while, you might be a casualty from cars.
Yeah.
So they hire these guards because stuff started actually disappearing.
That's so funny.
And then they found out that it was the guards stealing.
Yeah.
So they hired these guards and they were like, this is a fucking movie set. This isn't real stuff.
Yeah, like, so they don't give a shit.
Yeah, so they start stealing it. And then they had to hire guards to watch the guards.
No, shut up. Just hire new guards.
You got to put that $17 million somewhere.
It's like, we got an extra couple thousand. Like, yeah. Let's just have guards.
We just got guards. What?
But those other guards that were stealing were still being paid as guards.
As guards? Like, they didn't, like, sack them from the movie?
Maybe because they didn't know who was doing what.
They couldn't pin it out. I was like, oh, it was Joe who was over at Toys R Us.
So like, maybe they, like, the second set of guards were more just, like, just spies. Spy guards.
We don't know which one of you is doing it.
Yeah.
We know one of you is. We can't afford to let any of you go.
It was a social experiment.
So, guards.
Guards. New band name, I call it.
guards. Universal is looking at the daily budget come in, and they're just like confused. Like, what the hell are you guys doing?
Well, we bought a Toys R Us.
Yeah. We started a mall. We're losing hand over fist in there, but because we're not selling anything.
Well, we saw being stolen by our guards.
Yeah. Why are there four separate line items for guards, guards, PAs, and PAAs? What are you guys fucking doing?
Making a movie. Leave us alone.
This is Hollywood, baby.
Clint, can you confirm that I did not give you any homework for today's recording?
I can confirm no homework was given. I even asked for it. So I'm coming in blind. I have no idea. I have no clue what we're going to be talking about.
Ray, is it true that even though we live together?
Yes.
I have not told you what we'll be doing today.
That is correct.
Guesses?
Can we like ask like 20 questions or something? Are we going to be talking about a movie?
With that in mind, I'd like to show you two.
Oh, God.
A trailer.
Oh, God.
For an upcoming film.
Okay.
Okay, so I'm going to show you this trailer.
Mm-hmm.
Pay attention and notice a fun little twist at the end of it.
Okay.
Twist.
1,000 years have passed since our kingdoms have assembled. Our only hope lies in the prophecy.
A hero's journey.
All hands on deck.
The search for truth and honor.
My people have put their faith in me, and I'm their only hope.
We've been waiting generations for this moment.
The power of revenge.
I have no idea what
this
is. I have
no fucking clue.
Oh my goodness.
In theaters 2013.
Empires of the Deep. That's the most like generic. I thought it was Little Mermaid for a second.
I thought you said it was upcoming. Very, like...
With the recent news about Warner Brothers canceling the Batgirl film, I wanted to do a whole topic about unreleased films. And 2 minutes into researching Empires of the Deep, I knew this was going to be our own episode.
Wow.
Quite possibly the most expensive film never to see the light of day.
Oh, really? My God.
This is an unreleased film. Ancient Greece.
Okay, I was getting some like Jason and the Argonauts, like ancient Greece kind of situation. Vibes.
Our restless protagonist, Atlas, the son of Poseidon, transforms or has an alter ego into the heroic pirate Silvereye.
Okay.
And he does this to save his brethren. One day, an army of merman knights riding giant crabs.
Why does a merman need to ride a...
Merman! That just reminds me of Zoolander.
Invades Atlas's village and kidnaps his adoptive father, General Damos. And a 90-foot lobster takes with them their holy temple of Poseidon. Atlas and his pirates embark on a quest across the sea. They arrive at a mysterious palace where bewitching women lure Atlas's men into bed. Have their way with them and kill them.
Ooh, I was to say empires of the deep.
Yeah.
Also, this takes place on Crab Island, so take that with what you will.
Crab. It's called Crab Island. Jesus.
It's right next to gonorrhea.
Yeah. gonorrhea inlet.
The peninsula.
Gonorrhea Bay. The Syphilis Peninsula.
Also, the role of Akka, the mermaid princess, Atlas's love interest, was already cast. Shi Yan Fei, who just happens to be, who would you guess?
I'm going to say his
Zhang's
daughter.
Daughter or niece. Close.
What? Girlfriend.
Girlfriend. Zhang's girlfriend.
Of course. He met her on Crab Island. Oh, no, that's mean. She's probably she's probably delightful.
How do you say nepotism in Mandarin?
So Lawrence finally convinces him the first act needs to be rewritten to set up the characters better so all the action actually has stakes, right? Zhang lets him do this, but then cuts it all out, saying, get to the action, get to the action. And this is how the interaction with Lawrence went, how he explained their kind of what Zhang kept telling him.
He kept talking about Transformers. This is going to be big like Transformers. He said it was a cross between Transformers and Shakespeare. I was trying to wrap my head around that, and I said, I think you're going to alienate one of those audiences.
Transformers and Shakespeare.
This combination of people is the best thing. I just, like, I love, like, John Lawrence's just, like, what? Like, he's just, like, just straightforward kind of, like, what the actual fuck? And then, like, this guy is just, like, no nonsense.
Yeah.
Like bullshit. Like it's so good.
Well, I mean, based on the trailer, I think it does kind of capture Transformers meets Shakespeare.
And we say it doesn't at all.
No, but we can attest that it doesn't work.
Yeah. I mean,
it's got the scale that I think he wants about
like a Transformers scale, Transformers but with scale. Like the drama and fantasy of like the Tempest.
Yeah.
You know,
just Avatar.
Yeah. So I could see just based on the trailer, like kind of like what he was thinking, but I think it's absolutely right. You're going to alienate one of the
audiences. You're going to alienate those are big audiences. Every audience is going to be alienated.
This sounds like the kind of movie that if you were to give 10-year-old Clint $1 billion, this is the kind of movie that 10-year-old Clint would
get. And then there's mermaids. Yeah. But sometimes they're also on land. And then
and there's this really cute girl that I love in my sixth grade class, and she really wants to be in this movie, and she has to shoot on top of this mountain.
And she's gonna be the princess.
Yeah.
And there's gonna be like battles and like ships, and like he's a good guy, but also he's the bad guy.
And his name is Silver Eye. Isn't that so cool?
Isn't that so cool? Wow. I'm like, okay, Clint.
And then Optimus Prime shows up.
And then Shakespeare?
I want Shakespeare to be running in battle with a sword, fighting up against Optimus Prime.
Yeah.
He's like,
to be or not to be, bitch.
Okay. Production was a drunken party.
Ooh.
All the extras with their fancy cars, because they needed a shit ton of people to bring their cars. And most of the people that that didn't have speaking roles, all the cars that you saw in the background, there's just people like lending their cars. They were just drunk all the time, nice. And they would just drag race
just
between
driving
shots.
Around.
Wow.
Yeah, and so it was just this chaos. Anytime the camera, whatever the camera wasn't looking at, was just nonsense. Harrison Ford and Paul LaMatt were the worst. Paul LaMatt playing is the
John
Milner, the yellow coupe. they were consistently drunk. They set a hotel room on fire. They would pee in the ice machines.
And they
would hold races to the top of the spinning Holiday Inn sign.
Wow.
No, why would they pee in the ice machine?
One day,
just like little, get like a little pee ice cube in your in your Diet Coke. No, I hate that.
One day, they're standing around by the pool and they're just throwing beer bottles into the parking lot.
Oh my God, they sound like dicks.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Wow.
So Dreyfus confronts them and he's like, "What the fuck are you guys doing?" And they're like, and they start, I mean, it started becoming very much a, like a fraternity,
mm-hmm. right?
And Dreyfus is like, "What the fuck are you guys doing?" Lomat's like, "Oh, oh," and then he throws Dreyfus into the pool and he hits his forehead. And I was watching the movie trying to like see if I could see that. Apparently he had a big goose egg.
On
and
his head?
I didn't see any shots where he had
no,
the goose
egg.
No,
I didn't either. Mm.
After this, Ford was the worst and he got banned from the hotel for the rest of the shoot.
Mm.
He had to go to a different hotel.
Thought you were going to say from the rest
by
of his
himself.
Life.
Lucas was so serious about sticking to the budget, he tasked his head electrician to shut off all generators the second 5 a.m. hit. Like, even if they were in the middle of a shot, if 5 a.m. hit, they would just turn it off
just
and be like,
off.
We're done. Like,
yeah,
day's
hard,
over.
Hard cut.
Interesting.
Lucas, when he did get really mad, it was a big thing. It was a big moment when he finally snapped. He got so angry. He was just because he's just riding this pressure and he's mm-hmm. just get it on, get it done. And shit's going wrong all the time. People are drunk and being
it's
assholes.
Got fucking
drag
Harrison
racing.
Ford yeah. burned out.
Peeing in his eyes.
Peeing in his eyes, eating two donuts. What a fucking monster.
Burning down the Holiday Inn.
I'm just picturing him like, just like, he's like, I'm so thirsty. I'm going to take a drink of this like nice, refreshing like Coca-Cola. And there's just like a pee ice cube on the top. And he's like, that's it. That's it. And he
Ford's
just
across the way.
Yeah. They like high five yeah. him and Milner.
They're just like rubbing their hands together. Like, yes.
We got him.
It's not until May of 2014 that Noel's untitled film would be announced, with Gareth Edwards signed on to direct 1 week after his Godzilla film opened. That's the one with Bryan Cranston
Aaron
very shortly.
Taylor Johnson.
Yeah. Lucasfilm had only seen his first film, Monsters, from 2010, and were like, yeah, this would be a great guy to direct. So, and then they obviously saw Godzilla in the process. And they interviewed him, obviously, to find out he's a huge Star Wars geek. For his 30th birthday, he went to Tunisia to the Skywalker home and brought blue dye
and
put
milk.
It in some milk.
He just sat in the desert drinking blue milk on his birthday. It's the saddest birthday I've ever heard.
Is it though? Just or like, is it just really, really
kidding?
Awesome?
Say Clint doing
I
that.
Mean,
he would love that.
Listen, I guess like you do you, Gareth Edwards, and also Clint, but that sounds like no fun.
That sounds like a great time.
So the house is still there, just in the Tunisian desert, just like chilling?
Yeah, from what I understand, I don't know like if there's someone that's upkeeping. From what I know that it's like way the fuck out there.
Yeah.
Like it's pretty hard to get to.
Well, happy birthday, Gareth.
Nerd.
Listen, the blue milk that you can get at Galaxy's Edge at Disneyland is really good.
Oh.
If you go to Disney World, you can get some alcohol with it. And that is also really
get
good.
Get some rum in your
yeah.
your blue coconut
yeah,
milk.
Yeah, it's fucking delicious.
I got
a blue Russian.
Yeah, I got lit on blue milk.
See? He would definitely go
maybe,
to the desert with blue
maybe
milk.
Maybe that's what Gareth Edwards was drinking in the desert. He's just like, I got my little flask of rum and my blue milk. Woo! Party in the desert!
Was he by himself? I really hope he wasn't.
There's photos of
okay,
him.
Okay.
So someone was taking pictures of him.
I mean, he probably had a camel. There's probably a camel there.
Yeah.
You know,
he just set the camera on the camel and just did a...
just making that noise, you know?
Set the camera on a timer, yeah.
He seems like an easygoing guy without a big
absolutely.
Ego.
Absolutely.
So that's cool.
Yes.
Because it's there's
exactly.
not very many people like that in Hollywood.
Well, exactly. I want to be his friend. I want him to take me to Tunisia.
Yeah. You guys are going to go drink so much blue milk in
yeah.
the desert.
It's going to be fucking awesome.
Two men found dead in the desert from dehydration. Yeah.
Will look just like Uncle Aunt Beru and Uncle Owen outside of the homestead.
You guys accidentally lit yourself on fire somehow.
Frozen in carbonite. How did that even happen?
Yeah. Or bleached bones.
They start their 5 weeks of reshoots, which is a lot. And rumors start that nearly 40% of the film is being reshot. And according to reporters, sources say it's simple character stuff, like it's just a lot of talking in cockpits. This is total bullshit.
The old talking and cocking. The old cock and talk.
The old cock talk.
Yeah, we gotta shoot some cock and talks later today.
Can you cock and talk with me?
Yeah, let's go do a little cock and talk. A little cock talk.
I've seen that movie.
That's what I'm going to start calling like one-on-ones at work until I get fired. Let's go a little cock talk.
Just anytime as a man.
Pardon?
That's funny. Now, Ian and I know each other's bosses, so that'd be really funny if we started to call and say, hey boss, are we going to do a cock and talk?
I mean, if you explain...
The cock
talk. Well, I was having a cock talk with
Elliot, yeah. I mean, but if you explained the beginnings of Elliot would be into it. He'd be like, oh, of course.
Then Elliot would go like this.
In this vein, at the end of some days, not every day, because that would be insane, but Edwards would shoot what he called Indie Hour, where they would film random imagery just for the fun of it.
Okay. So
that is independent film right there.
Yeah.
Oh my God. And some like bean counter account was like just sweating bullets. Like, this is such a waste of money.
That's exactly right.
Oh, that's like a fucking studio exec's worst goddamn nightmare.
What are they doing down there?
This is Edwards explaining
fun.
It.
Studio executives are the empire, basically. It was just a way for the crew of understanding for now. We're just going to do loads of random shit. Shite. Don't try to ask, we can't explain. It would just be things I thought were a beautiful moment or this is a great idea, and a lot of the stuff in the trailer ended up through that process. I definitely love the spirit of it. Like, anyone who can take the hell that it is to make a movie and just be like, let's just have fun, guys.
Yeah,
because it's so fucking stressful and there's so much that can go wrong and there's so much money on the line. So, like, the fact that he was just like, you know what? Let's just let go of all that and just have fun for an hour. But again, I'm telling you that, like, so many people were getting so sweaty amount of money that was being spent.
So, when the trailer company was given the film's footage... All the footage, they found all of that Indie Hour stuff.
That looked like super awesome and trailer worthy.
Yeah. And they were like, let's put those into the trailer. So that explains some of the stuff on there. So Gareth Edwards confirmed only two of them. One is Jin turning around in the hallway as the lights come on.
Yeah.
And then when Ben Mendelsohn Krennic is kind of like standing alone in the
that control room or whatever.
Yeah, of the Death Star. So those are the only two he says were that. But like some of them are so like well composed that you're kind of like, maybe that was it. Like maybe Krennic when he's walking through the water.
That's
and
a
it's
cool.
And all the dead soldiers around there.
That's a fucking maybe. Cool shot too.
I don't know.
But he never goes on the beach at Scarif, so like that shot doesn't.
Yeah, but we'll get to the differences. So the trailer company also came up with the idea of Jin walking towards the TIE fighter. So like that's just a shot of her walking to realign the satellite dish, but they're like, let's put a TIE fighter in front of her, and they're like, because it symbolizes the David versus Goliath of this whole story. But it was like, it's such a like, this seems like a really big moment to not have it in the movie, right?
Well, yeah, and the whole story, you can't just be putting TIE fighters in shots where they don't exist in the movie. These coked out trailer bros need to calm the fuck down. You know what would be cool? It's like, my dude, tone it down a bit.
I just got done listening to an episode of Cock Talk. Coked out trailer bros. That's awesome.
TIE fighter in the background while she's walking. Boom.
Oh, you fucking just blew my mind, man.
Oh, my
man.
God, dude.
Let's go to lunch. Yeah. It's 9 a.m. I don't give a shit.
Let's do coke.
let's go to lunch.
Now they just need who?
Bill.
Bill Murray.
What about Bill?
Okay, so this is what Melchior said about getting Bill Murray.
Everyone told us, I mean, everyone said, you are not getting Murray. No way, no how. In our initial meetings with Harold and Dan, they even cautioned us about getting in touch with him and having him do lines was going to be a task. We had an executive at Vivendi tell a room full of people that he would dig up his dead grandmother and fuck her if we got Bill Murray.
Wow. Like as a threat or as like...
like, yeah, right.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's as likely as me digging up my dead grandmother and fucking her.
Yeah.
Yikes.
I want to know if he did it now.
Well...
You're about to find out.
So what's funny about that is like, do you just have that in the back of your mind as like a just in case?
That's my threat all the time.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, what a place to work where you could just throw out those scenarios. Like if I were in my job and I had like a meeting and they're like, Clint, can you do this? Like, that's as likely as me digging up my dead grandmother and fucking her. Like my boss would be like,
what?
What?
You'd get a call from HR and like 5 minutes later.
Yeah, I'd be gone.
As a person who worked in entertainment, it's very different.
Yeah, you don't get that kind of talking in higher ed.
There's no HR. You drop F-bombs all day long. No one really cares.
Well, remember Grandpa or Grandma Fucker because he'll come back.
All right.
So that was an executive at Vivendi?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So right off the bat, he calls Bill Murray's infamous 1-800 line, which is what he uses for any business, and he only checks it a few times a year. So people who reach out to want to be in his movie, he only will listen to it months from then, and then even if he cares. And the only person he's ever said that he's like gets an automatic yes is Wes Anderson. So everybody else is just kind of like, you're just hoping that when you ask him to do something, he's going to be one of those days where he's close to checking his messages.
If it interests him, on tape. It's still
a thing for him?
Absolutely.
Wow.
Yep.
It's wild times.
Do we know that 1-800 number?
I think it's 1-800 Bill Murr. That makes sense.
You had to sit there and go through the numbers.
Three and then four. That's seven. Okay. Yep.
Okay. So Melchior steps up his attempts to get Bill Murray. He sends Murray's lawyer an offer, and he doesn't even hear back from that guy. probably because his lawyer probably
his
just, like,
lawyer
he doesn't
has
care.
To also call the 1-800 number. Yeah. That's
it's
the problem.
Probably true.
That is the problem.
He's like, Jesus Christ. All right.
We've already established the only person who has Bill Murray's personal like cell phone number is Wes Anderson.
Even his kids have to call the
1-800. No, his kids have to call the 1-800. His brother, they're like, hey, Brian Doyle Murray, can you call? He's like, you guys, I also only have the 1-800 number.
In his gravelly voice.
Yeah. He has like one of those kids' phones that only has like five numbers on it, and it pretty much just is Wes Anderson.
Just Wes Anderson. It's like his fax. Okay, so this one, a lot of people probably thought I was going to go over this based off the title of this episode, but Bette Davis and Joan Crawford, mostly because Ryan Murphy, who, mm-hmm. like American Horror Story, did Feud on FX, and it was just entirely about these two.
Well, season two one, actresses. But he's doing, well, there are other seasons, right?
I think so. I'm not sure.
Like, they're doing different feuds.
Yeah. So, but this one.
Oh, really? Their whole other feud series is just an anthology series with each season that go over a different feud?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Kind of like American Horror Story.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, gotcha.
American Crime Story and stuff like that. Yeah. So, anyway, I'm following Harper Bazaar's timeline on this, which is really, really fascinating. So, and I haven't watched the TV show, so I don't know how much they actually cover in this, but it's pretty fascinating. The feud apparently started when Crawford's divorce, the news of her divorce, overshadowed Bette Davis's first starring role, causing it to bomb. So, like, people were, like, not talking about her movie, so nobody went to see it. And so then...
Oh, because of the divorce news?
Yeah, because it was such a big deal.
That's such a stupid thing to hate somebody over.
Yeah.
Like,
this is the 30s.
That's just... what else did they have? There was other shit going on. There was the Great Depression. They had way more serious things to feud about back then.
Yeah.
Okay, so 1935, Crawford marries Davis's secret love,
who, in return, this guy, Crawford says, thought Betty Davis was a good actress, but he never thought her, never thought of her as a woman.
What?
Ooh, harsh.
But she's got those eyes.
Harsh.
Okay. 1940s. There's they attempt to make a truce and it fails, and then Crawford takes two roles originally offered to Davis, and Crawford is nominated for an Oscar for both wins one.
Oh. I mean. All right.
And so then
it keeps piling up.
Yeah. So and then Betty Davis says, she says, Miss Crawford is a movie star. I am an actress.
Oh, so,
this is like,
damn.
Like,
says the loser.
This is some old school shade.
Miss Crawford is a movie star, but I, sir, and I'm an actress.
Yeah, that's right. Does the shoulder thing.
It's the 1930s.
Okay. So this all boils down to 1962. This movie called Whatever Happened to Baby Jane. And this is, from what I understand, this is what Feud, the TV show, follows, is the making of this movie.
It's like the height of the feud.
Yeah.
So there's all this like kind of back and forth, like kind of like Hollywood drama.
Yeah.
Bullshit going on.
Right.
But then this happens.
Yeah. So some director was like, yeah, let's put these two together.
I had a death wish, I guess.
Yeah.
This is, the movie is about, it's a psychological horror about a crazy woman who holds her crippled sister hostage in an old house.
Oh, I mean, I guess that makes sense, right? He's like, I'm making a psychological thriller. I want to get two people who hate each other. I'm going to create this, like, unhealthy relationship and this unhealthy, like, feeling on set.
Smart.
So Davis signed on.
That guy was method director.
Yeah. You never hear of those. You just hear of method actors.
It doesn't happen very often.
Yeah.
Davis signed on only if she got to play the star role and that the director wasn't sleeping with Crawford.
That's in her contract?
Yes. This is legit. Davis said, I don't want him favoring her with more close-ups.
That's so petty. No shtipping clause?
Yeah.
In your contract?
Yeah, no shtipping.
No shtipping the director.
Yep.
At some point, Betty Davis said, Joan Crawford slept with every male star at MGM, except Lassie.
Well, Lassie was...
I thought Lassie was a girl.
Yeah, Lassie was a girl.
Oh, but Lassie was a girl character dog played by a boy dog?
That's one of the... Yeah.
It's a motion-captured person.
It's Benedict Cumberbatch.
He was... Even back then, he was talented.
Yeah.
Okay, so think of yourself. Go back to the Bennifer days when everything was about them.
Yes, high ponytails, everybody wearing choker necklaces and ball chain necklaces, really wide triangle pants.
Yep,
I had a chain. These are the '90s,
girl. The early 2000s was still the '90s.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, I had a chain on my wallet.
Yeah, everyone had a chain on their fucking wallet back then.
Oh my god, this is 2002.
Yeah.
I wore a Superman t-shirt that I had my mom sew a red cape onto it.
Oh my god.
Yeah. I wore that.
Is that in Clint's closet?
I wish,
what
man.
The
I told.
Fuck.
I was so fucking cool.
Dude, you should have.
Yeah, that's one way of saying
it. I mean. That's a word for it. You should have Lisa sew another cape on your current.
No, she
Superman
wouldn't do that.
T-shirt.
I sew it myself. I got a sewing machine. I'll do it myself.
All right. I like that. I like that equality.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sew your own fucking cape, Clint.
Yeah, I'm gonna sew my cape. Jeez. Yeah.
What was the cape made out of?
What is happening?
My mom and I, bless her heart, we went to a fabric store and I said, Mom, let's get some red fabric and sew a cape on my Superman shirt. And she's like, all right. And I wore it to school, and I, like some people, I'm sure, probably made fun of me, but I wore that fucker with such confidence.
Oh, yeah, that takes confidence.
Those
dicks in high school wish they could pull that off.
Children listening, this is what the early 2000s was like, okay?
Not to mention the Jedi robe I wore.
Okay. Not so much think about what you were doing, but think about all the things about Bennifer.
Sure.
During the premiere in mid-October, the studio had a whole thing on the street, and they made it look like Christmas.
Yeah.
And they were all about making jokes as to why the film was opening that week, like it was a week before Halloween. Like, it's so funny, right?
Like, they were trying to play it off as it was, like, yes, intentional and hilarious.
Yes.
Like all the improvising they did.
Yes. So these are all the different quotes from the people. This is DreamWorks marketing person, Terry Press.
You know how summer movies start in April? We're saying the Christmas movie season starts in October.
Jennifer Ventimiglia, co-writer.
In the first draft, it was called Surviving Halloween.
Josh Sternin, also co-writer.
The film is just 10 months late from last Christmas.
This is producer Betty Thomas.
The early launch is because we're releasing our Groundhog Day movie on Christmas.
And this is Ben Affleck.
This movie could even be out on DVD by the time fucking Christmas rolls around.
That's the best one yet.
Oh, I love this. I love it.
That's all I got.
Wow.
Was Surviving Christmas worth it?
No.
No. No. Not even a little bit. We barely survived Surviving Christmas.
Yeah, after I watched that movie, I literally wanted to drive over here, knock on your door, slap you in the face. And then just drive away.
We wouldn't have answered. We have a peephole.
Like, yeah. Like, what the fuck is Clint doing here? Open up, goddammit. You made me watch Surviving Christmas.
Well, it's not time to record the podcast yet. Why is he here? He's not allowed. He knows he's not allowed over here unless we're recording.
He's not allowed.
He knows the stipulations of our restraining orders.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
He can only be here for recording days.
Must maintain a 100-foot distance at all times unless recording the podcast.
I this is not a movie review show. We say it all the time, but that movie was dog shit.
Okay, so Craig felt that when he did Casino Royale, he was very free and blissfully ignorant. He was just like, cool, I'm Bond, let's get it done.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Everybody made fun of me, I'm just going to get it done.
Right.
But by the time they started Quantum, the magnitude of the role had taken on that the role that he had taken on was fully on his shoulders, and he felt his performance suffered for it. Like, he was just so, like, in his head while he was making Quantum.
Like, am I being Bond enough?
Yeah. Yeah, or he's probably just looked moody, right? And just kind of annoyed. So this is the next Craig quote, and I'm going to put a language warning in front of this. That we do swear on the podcast, if you haven't noticed. But there's going to be a word in here that I never use in my personal life.
I use it all the time. It's one of my favorites.
He is a very British person, and British people use this word a lot.
Oh, you're going to make me read this?
Yes.
Oh, man.
So you can do it in a regular voice if you want.
I'll read the C word.
It's a good thing my wife doesn't listen to this podcast.
Do you want to read it?
I'll read it. I never really get a chance to say it.
This is your one chance to say it, and it's okay. You're reading a quote.
Oh no, it's gonna break open the dam.
This is basically documentary film. You're a journalist at this point.
Yeah,
okay?
It's true. Yeah,
this
I keep up my journalistic integrity.
Journalistic integrity. Yeah, okay. But also, if you feel uncomfortable, you can just pause, and I'll say the word.
I'm with Ian. I don't like this word. I don't like to say it, but given the opportunity, why not?
We'll give you permission.
Okay. All right. We did Quantum of Solace, which was a bit of a shit show to say at least. To say
ding,
the
ding,
least.
Ding, 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 ding. He said the name of the podcast. Ding, 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 ding.
And the full weight of it made me locked up. Thankfully, since then, it's just been about loosening up and trying to get back to that feeling of Casino Royale, which is just like, come on, it's James Bond, enjoy yourself. Let's have a good time. I mean, I'm still a moody.
Ding, 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 ding.
That's the word of the day.
He is referring to himself, though.
Yes, yes.
Yes, yes. Again, and journalistic integrity.
Random fun stat here. A university in New Zealand wanted to determine via numbers if movies were getting more violent. So they use
James Bond series as a gauge. Again, film royalty has been around for decades, right? Yeah. So they considered everything in a movie from trivial to severely violent acts. That could be slapping someone to killing someone or firing a gun. How many acts slash moments do you think Dr. No contained?
I'm going to wager a guess of 4.
I'm going to say 15.
Well, it was Sean Connery, and he does like to slap women.
Yeah, he's real slap happy, that guy.
109.
You're really bad at this game. Let's go back to the other game where we just say the titles. This game's hard.
Quantum of Solace is the most violent Bond film.
Oh, shit.
So per their numbers.
But it doesn't even have the nutsack roping in it.
Yeah, that's true. a lot of...
Did you count every single nutsack rope?
Oh, absolutely.
Yes. Okay. You would do it. Yes.
Every time the rope ball comes in contact with the nutsack is one act of violence.
Okay, all right. I didn't know if the whole nut scene sack was just one. Gotcha. Yeah.
Okay. How many do you think in Quantum?
So if Dr. No, the first Bond film in 61, had 109.
And 100 of those are just Sean Connery slapping women. Which, that's why you were off, because you were like, I don't consider that violence at all.
No, I was counting how many times he slaps a guy. What a 109 in Dr. No. Mm-hmm. Quantum of Solace has the most. Oh, I'm going to say it's like 700.
I'm going to go with the same number that I thought the budget was and say 400.
250.
Oh, gee, I'm way off.
We should have gone with the number that was the actual budget of the movie.
Yeah.
They're like, this movie, for every act of violence, it's $1 million. that's how their accountants put those budgets together.
So I'm guessing based off of that, that would have to be like for every punch. So if like a fist fight in a movie had Bond punching a guy 10 times, that's 10 acts. That's my guess. So
I think so.
So like what you said, they're like, via the nutsack rules, you can't punch him anymore.
Yeah.
We don't have any more money.
Yeah.
Ooh, can we get one extra punch in this scene? There's like the bean counters like, no.
We only have
enough line items for 10 punches for this scene. We've only budgeted that much.
Okay. 2 months into filming, Daniel Craig slipped while walking.
Oh, you guys, he's old now. Just imagine him like,
did he slip and walk when he was doing the famous, like the barrel gun? He's like, whip.
They use it in the movies.
Instead of the wah-da-wah-da's, wah-wah.
And also, he kind of like just let a tiny fart, like when it just had insult to injury. The director's like, you guys, don't laugh. Nobody laugh.
Don't laugh at him. Don't laugh at him. Fucking shit.
Just laying there going, I don't want to do this anymore. So he injured his ankle. And it delayed filming for 2 weeks. He said it was just like, he's like, it's so stupid. He's like, I've done all these injuries from all these other things. And he was like, he was like walking on a pier, but I don't even think it was like wet.
The story, it just keeps getting more funny. Oh my God.
Daniel. What happened? Was it like did you do your own stunts again? Was it? No, mate, I was walking. Fucking slipped.
On a pier, it wasn't even wet at the time. Completely dry pier.
Was it on a wet pier? No.
So.
When he slips, all you hear is, bada, bada!
And then the gun barrel actually pulls it off and shoots Bond. Oh my God.
Okay.
Oh man. So
stupid. Delayed 2 weeks. Oh. All because of a slippery, non-wet pier.
Okay. And one other thing was that a month later, an explosion went awry, blowing up part of the studio set.
Oh.
And
and
only one crew member was hurt, but he was outside when he was hit. And he had like a minor injury. He's probably like out there eating a sandwich.
Just on a bench.
Like like one tiny piece of shrapnel like just hits him on the like side of the leg. Ow.
Ah.
There are mosquitoes out here.
What? Yeah, he's like this. What the fuck was that?
Turns around. Oh god. The studio blew up.
Didn't even hear it. He was listening to a podcast.
Actually,
about explosions.
It was. He didn't even get injured from the explosion. He also slipped right on that pier, right on that non-wet pier, just walking down with his hoagie.
The fuck?
I don't know why this is so funny. He's on the
ground. Oh, my sandwich.
Oh. His bologna falls out.
There was one casualty. The man's bologna sandwich.
R.I.P. bologna sandwich.
It's the curse of Bond.
Yeah, the curse of Bond.
He falls to his knees. No!
At the end of the film.
Behind him is a fire truck.
Wee-oo.
My sandwich.
Daniel Craig's like limping by with his fucked up knee and his ankle.
At the end of the film, dedicated to bologna sandwich.
Honestly, I'm surprised that bologna sandwich was not the name of a Bond novel. Based on fucking Ian Fleming's naming skills.
The property of a bologna sandwich.
The bologna rarity.
Octa bologna.
Bologna solace.
You only bologna twice.
No time to bologna.
Golden bologna.
Oh my god.
Like, we do this all night, you guys.
Yeah, I know.
Thunder bologna.
Thunder bologna. No, bologna ball.
That's what it turned out. That's what it ended up.
My stomach hurts.
So,
this was a semi shit show.
Yeah, just a
little shit.
Sounds like
this is a poop show.
That sounds like a breeze.
Yeah,
a shark.
A shark show.
Oh my god, it was a little nugget.
So, why do you think Poltergeist was a shit show? And does anybody actually know?
I think I actually know, but I'll let you guys guess first.
I have no idea.
I don't.
There's a very classic, very like. Folklore about this film.
I do no research. I just show up and expect you to tell me.
Yeah, same. Sometimes I don't even watch the movie. That was only once. That was once, and I'd already seen it, so it was okay.
We'll never let him live it down.
I don't let myself live it down. I come in like, guys, I'm sorry I didn't watch Blues Brothers again. One of my favorite movies. I'm
exactly.
Sorry.
No, that's why I'm here today, is because you didn't watch Blues Brothers.
Yeah,
so that's why we're going through the audition process. Yes. I came super prepared.
So everything revolves around one question. Do you know what that question is?
Who actually directed this movie?
That is correct. So this film was absolutely something Spielberg wanted to make. After all, he was the writer and a producer. But because he was in pre-production for E.T., per Universal's contract, he wasn't allowed to direct anything else. So E.T. was set to film in September of 1981. And apparently Spielberg had a lot of time on his hands because he was on set for Poltergeist all but for 3 days.
It's like, I'm not directing this movie except for that you should stand over there. But I'm not directing this movie.
Contractually not doing it.
Hey, Toby, shouldn't that person be standing over there?
So I wonder, Toby, if they delivered the line like this.
Okay, so... Because of Spielberg's intense involvement, reports leak to the press that Spielberg is actually the director, not Toby Hooper. So he's going around his contract.
I mean, until like recently, I was assumed it was Spielberg.
Yeah, okay.
Well, you said that when we watched the movie. You were like, oh, this was directed by Spielberg. And then it was like, directed by Toby Hooper. And you were like, wait, what the fuck?
Yeah. Yeah. I was watching this movie with my boyfriend and he was like, oh, that's weird. They spelled Steven Spielberg wrong.
Like, really wrong. Like, it's not even an anagram. Yeah,
not even in the ballpark.
So one day, the LA Times decides to visit the set. Hooper is in the backyard filming a scene with them burying the bird.
Tweety.
Tweety, yes, the bird. Yeah.
And Spielberg is in the front yard filming Second Unit. Now, for those who don't know, Second Unit essentially is filming stuff that you don't need the actors for. It could be establishing shots of the house. It could be – a lot of the times it's action scenes, helicopter shots, crowd shots, people in a fight, like a just the middle of a fight, like a – in the middle of a war movie. It's generally just they don't need the director to be there because it's just easy stuff to get.
But they have a second unit director who's been
second unit directors
christened by the director.
Exactly.
I don't know. Yes.
I dub the second
water,
unit.
I don't know the rituals. Yeah. Okay.
So like Andy Serkis did second unit for the Hobbit trilogy. Anyway, so Spielberg's just in the front yard filming like kids going by or like filming the house or whatever.
The guy dropping the beer.
Yeah, or something like stuff like that. The reporter pulls up at the house and who does he see directing?
Right.
So LA Times runs with the idea that Spielberg is actually shadow directing the film. And when asked for comment, producer Frank Marshall says, "The creative force of the movie was Steven. Toby was the director and was on set every day, but Steven did the design for every storyboard." When straight up asked about this controversy, this is what Spielberg said.
"Toby isn't a take charge sort of guy. If a question was asked and an answer wasn't immediately forthcoming, I'd jump in and say what we could do. Tobe would nod in agreement, and that became the process of collaboration."
Fuck you, Steven. Oh my God, that's so annoying. I'm so annoyed. Right?
I'm
triggered. I'm so triggered right now.
That quote itself just like really colors my my vision of Steven Spielberg.
Yeah.
Again, I think it's just like he was just coming off of these hit after hit and he was just really cocky and he was just a little young and he just thought he was just the bee's knees.
King of the world.
And really he was ruling Hollywood, so why not?
Yeah,
right?
he's John Travolta strutting down the street in Saturday Night Fever.
But he keeps using this phrase, "he designed the film." Like he doesn't
because he can't say directed.
Exactly.
So he's being very like annoyingly careful. "I designed it."
And to continue,
designer is a different credit in the
And the production designer's like, "What the fuck, dude?
I also designed
this film."
I don't see you up late at night making a giant paper mache ghost head to come out of the wall.
Yeah, exactly.
You son of a bitch.
I don't see you mixing fucking poltergeist guts in a jar.
Making a shitty looking but really expensive prosthetic.
All you did was come in and rip it off.
Yeah.
I didn't see you spending 2 weeks making pink Jell-O so that we could put this movie together.
I dug that hole for the pool.
With my bare
hands.
They didn't even give me a shovel.
Okay. You can't even tell when a kid is being strangled.
I mean,
oh my God.
To be fair, though, that person probably also made that strangulating clown doll as well. So.
It's just like a hole.
That's because I was up late making all that Jell-O. I didn't have time to calibrate the strangle.
No, that's why he just constantly dials it back. He cuts ghosts. People are like, "Oh, this strangled a kid. Yeah, I didn't design that.
That wasn't me.
I did all the good stuff.
That was Toby again."
Yeah. So insult to injury.
He's directed everything Steven Spielberg has directed, actually. You just didn't know. He's always there for all
the shit movies that Spielberg has done. He's just like, "Oh yeah, AI was Hooper."
Yeah, and I did Hook.
That was Hook. I helped design the film.
That one part about that one movie that I did was really good, but you didn't like. That was him.
Yeah.
He was actually behind everything about Crystal Skull. I mean,
that was his fault.
That was his whole idea. I just had nothing. I didn't want anything to do with it.
He's just going to be in a movie called Under the Bus. That's the starring Toby Hooper.
Under the Bus, the Toby Hooper story.
Directed by Steven Spielberg.
What a, oh man, what a fuck you.
Kazanov has a varied career, producing things like True Lies,
awesome,
James Cameron, but stuff like Ghoulies Go to College. So a lot of B-movie crap. Yeah. Okay. And he is the producer on all live-action adaptations.
Of Disney? The Disney live-action adaptation?
Of a film series you guys wanted me to talk about over and over.
Mortal Kombat?
Mortal Kombat?
Mortal Kombat.
Oh, my God. This is the closest we're ever going to get. This is the closest we're ever going to get to talking about Mortal Kombat.
He, Threshold and him, he holds the rights to any live-action version of Mortal Kombat.
Wow.
And he has produced every single version that you can think of.
I unironically loved the one that came out 2 years ago. Absolutely.
Me too. Me too, yes. So 97's Mortal Kombat, Annihilation.
Annihilation, which he has a story credit on.
Okay.
Look,
and then there was the Mortal Kombat TV series that they had.
Yeah, and that short. That was like on YouTube.
Yeah.
That led to the most recent movie.
So they had the short that the director of the Machinima series did as a pitch.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anything live action, he has to be involved.
And then the newest 2020.
Yes.
Oh my God.
Based on the quality of the visual effects in Mortal Kombat Annihilation, I can see it. Yeah.
I think he's my new favorite person.
Yeah. Like the dragon at the end of Mortal Kombat Annihilation was like food fight quality graphics.
Absolutely.
Oh my God, really? I never saw Annihilation.
It's the best.
You pretty much did.
You gotta watch it.
Food fight. Yeah. Okay.
But it does explain some things, right?
Yes. However, I'm going to say that Mortal Kombat Annihilation is amazing and you should watch it.
Okay.
Highly recommend.
I did like the first one when I was a kid.
First one is still not bad.
I love the first one.
I mean, it's really cheesy and stupid, but it's still fun.
I love
it
so much. Remember when Johnny Cage punches Goro in the balls?
Yeah.
It's the best.
Down in the splits.
Yeah.
Despite never directing anything before,
no.
Larry Kazanov will direct the film. I did look up, he has one other directing credit. He directed the first stage production of Mortal Kombat.
I want to see this.
Like Mortal Kombat, like, the musical?
It was like a fourth grade class.
Mortal Kombat Live.
Yeah, one of those. Yeah, yeah, one of those things like they did back in the day. Or still do?
Get over here. Get over here.
Fatality. Fatality.
It would probably be like the play in Adam's Family.
Yeah.
Where they're just like splurting blood all over the crowd.
Oh no, Goro. He's got four arms.
I would 1000% watch this.
I would 100%
play,
too.
Actually.
This is going to explain a lot of this movie. Because they're redoing everything, Kazanov uses this opportunity to capitalize on new technologies, specifically motion capture and facial capture.
I was just going to say motion capture, yeah.
Oh my God.
Both being outsourced to different companies. So, throughout production, Kazanov never established timelines or pipelines for approval, and he clearly didn't understand the technology they were using. Multiple people say that he assumed if you were using a computer, therefore you are an expert on all things. So he didn't know the difference between modeling and texturing. So,
well, you're one of those 3D artists. You can do all the things, right?
Yeah, just do it. Why
and
are you doing it?
Every single artist went,
yes.
That's five people, sir. That's five people's jobs.
He didn't seem to understand that motion capture and Looney Tunes animation are two very different things. So,
yeah, Mel Blanc not only did the voices, but the motion capture.
That's the coyote every time he fell off a cliff.
You just see him in a ball suit. Ain't I a stinker?
Getting shoved off cliffs. To explain, like Looney Tunes is the very exaggerated things where people run off the screen, but their head stays on and then their head goes, that kind of stuff. The squash and stretch nature of it all. which is not like in this movie at all.
I don't know, that weasel made me real uncomfortable.
Okay, oh my God. We'll need to talk about this weasel for 45 straight minutes. I have a lot to say.
Did anybody else feel uncomfortable? I mean, probably.
Yes.
The dog.
I had a hard on the whole time.
Yeah. Like with like Dex's fingers, the dog's fingers. Like
those, I don't know if I noticed.
Oh my God. Like every time I was watching it and his fingers like showed up, I physically shiver. I was like, oh my God.
I mean, there was a lot of creepy. That's how I felt about the weasel. So I don't think I noticed the dog fingers.
Weasel, you mean the walking penis?
Yes. Yeah, literally, the whole time we were calling him Greasy Dick Weasel because he was, why was he so wet?
And he was always standing like he was about to
probe something.
Yeah. Oh my God.
He kept going in between people's legs.
Yes.
When that character first showed up, we all went, what the fuck is that?
Happening?
And it took us like a whole scene to realize it was supposed to be a weasel. And I was like, that's a dick. Like, sorry, I don't.
The name's Throbbing the Weasel.
Seriously. Oh my God. It was...
A lot of the internet calls him the poop weasel.
I mean, okay, but. It's a dick.
I don't see any motion capture in that character at all.
I fucking hope not. Because that person would have to like go to the hospital after that.
Yeah.
They just put all the mocap balls on an erect penis.
Yeah. Just had to shake it around.
It was penis mocap.
We got it.
Do a real slow thrust. It'll be his inquisitive look.
Now wrap the head in a curly Q.
More towards the camera.
Now have it go underneath your legs and between your balls.
it's like puppetry of the penis, that act from Vegas.
Now you got to get hit by a train. We're going to smack it around.
Oh, Jesus
Christ. You got a fluffer for it.
In the credits, that was the best boy.
I thought that was the grip.
Yeah.
They work together.
Oh my God.
The best boy's crying. Someone get the grip.
I went to school for this.
And Larry's like, do it again.
More.
Greasier.
And send me the footage.
Greasier than this.
Yeah, it's more shine.
More wet.
Should look more wet.
Oh, what do you do for a living? Oh, I'm a mocap actor. Oh, you done anything recently or anything that I've seen? Maybe.
I don't know if you guys noticed this or not. Larry Kazanoff was the voice of Cheezel the Weasel.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Of course he was.
And motion capture.
Yeah. He was the mocap dick. Yeah. They're like, guys, busting old Cheezel out again. Slapping that thing around.
That weasel. Like every time I think about a different character that made me uncomfortable. Like every time we talk about a different character, like, oh no, that one made me most uncomfortable.
By far.
It's so the
weasel gets in your face a lot too. It's like, why get this dick out of my face?
Yeah, this greasy poop like of a dick. Thank you so much for coming.
Thanks for having me back.
Yeah,
yay,
for sure.
So glad to have you.
Mm-hmm.
Our animation expert.
Yeah. I didn't even mention that I used to be a motion capture technician.
What?
I just remembered that.
Dude, you're going to throw that at the fucking end?
I had a job for 3 months, but I was a motion capture technician.
On Food Fight?
No.
That's why the motion. You were so good at the motion.
Yeah, I did the scene where they hold hands and walked away and never connected their hands.
That is amazing.
Oh, God.
Did you ever have to work with any dicks?
Some assholes.
Thank you so much for listening. It Was a Shit Show is researched and produced by me, Ian Jench. Sound editing and mix by Ray Reynolds. Our theme music is by Ryan K. Hudson. Wardrobe provided by Clint's Closet. If you're enjoying the show, you can support us on Patreon or help spread the word by leaving a review and forcing your friends and family to listen. And if you have a shit show suggestion, find us on social media at It Was a Shit Show, but shit without the I. You can also find all these episodes on our YouTube channel.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.